sidelines, Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah slams Saudi Arabia for opening its airspace to Israeli flights, saying the move is a grave insult to all Muslims. Russia says it has destroyed a depot in southern Ukraine that was storing Harpoon anti-ship missiles delivered by NATO. And several wildfires sweep across southwest Europe as the second heat wave in weeks hits the region. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisoum Shahmadi and these are our top stories this hour. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah has censured Saudi Arabia for opening its airspace to all flights to and from the Israeli-occupied territories. The deputy head of Hezbollah's executive council says the decision is a, quote, grave insult to all Muslims worldwide and seen as a provocative act against them. Sheikh Nabil Koch says that the security and military cooperation with Israel will make Saudi Arabia a partner in the regime's aggression against Syria, Lebanon, and Palestine. He said this is a betrayal of the entire Islamic community. On Friday, ahead of a controversial visit by U.S. President Joe Biden, Saudi Arabia opened its airspace to all airlines, including those from Israel. That is seen as a step towards normalization of relations between Riyadh and Tel Aviv. In a U.S.-backed move, some Arab countries, including Bahrain and the UAE, restored ties with Israel in 2020. The normalization triggered strong protests across the Muslim world, with the Palestinians complaining that they had been stabbed in the back. Yemen's Ansarullah movement says the summit held in the Saudi port city of Jeddah and attended by visiting U.S. President Joe Biden was only aimed at serving the interests of Israel. Senior Ansarullah official Mohammed Ali Al-Houthi says Biden's tour of the West Asia region was an attempt to prop up Israel with Arab and Muslim nations' money. Houthi also slammed the normalization of ties between some Arab nations and Israel. He says that the normalizations will never make Israel more powerful. Washington had earlier indicated that Biden will use the summit to push for a military coalition of Arab nations and Israel against Iran, but no commitment to such an alliance was made by the participants. Iran has dismissed accusations by U.S. President Joe Biden that it is carrying out destabilizing activities in West Asia. Tehran says the U.S. is trying to foment tensions in West Asia by resorting to the failed policy of Islamophobia. Earlier, we discussed this issue in our news review program. Let's take a listen.
Time now for the news review. Iran says the United States is trying to foment tension and crisis in West Asia by resorting to the failed policy of Iranophobia. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani made a comment in reaction to the U.S. president, who's accused Iran of destabilizing activities in West Asia. He also slammed Biden for raising false allegations regarding Tehran's peaceful nuclear energy program while ignoring decades of deception by the Tel Aviv regime as the largest possessor of nukes in the region. During an address to the GCC Plus 3 summit in Jeddah, Biden said the United States will remain as an active player in the region and it will not walk away to leave, quote, a vacuum to be filled by China, Russia, or Iran. Now that was the story. Time now to get some insight on this. So joining me will be a couple of guests from Tehran, Fuad Izzadi, Professor of International Studies with the University of Tehran. Also with us will be Tohid Asadi. He's a political commentator. Good to see you, gentlemen. Now, Professor Izzadi, U.S. won't walk away from the region to... that was really funny, to let Iran, Russia, and China... Well, why should the U.S. be in this region? I mean, what if we do the same thing in other parts of the world? I mean, regional countries are there. They have regional issues. Iran has its own proposal. Russia, China, others, other players in the region, they know what to do with their own issues. Why should the U.S. be in this region? And now we have Mr. Biden saying we will never walk away. Why should there be he in the first place?
You know, it does sound if you look at the history of the last number of decades, especially after World War II, the Middle East, the West, used to be an American backyard. Americans used to control Iran. They used to, and still control, and many other states in this part of the world. Majority of the states in West Asia were American clients. And 43 years ago with the Islamic Revolution in Iran, and then you had Americans basically coming under pressure from what the resistance movements and Iran leading that movement to make sure that of this region and interests of the people of the region are addressed without interference from the United States. And the situation as we speak is very difficult for the United States. You have countries like Russia and China that have also increased in this part of the world. And the United States president feels that he needs to publicly, the United States will not leave. Why would he have to say that? Because a lot of countries are basic that the United States is a power in decline, and they are making other choices. You look at the coverage of Biden's visit, quite negative. He failed to achieve most of the goals that he had, and I think this is another indication that United States standing in this part of the world is weakening as we speak.
Okay. Now, Tohid, let's take a look at this part of Mr. Biden's comment accusing Iran of fomenting tension and crisis. What's he talking about? I mean, I just don't get it, because what crisis? In Syria, for example, the Damascus government asked Iran to go and give some advisory, military advisory help. Iraqis asked for Iran help. We had General Soleimani and his colleagues fighting and helping Iraqis uproot. Is this fomenting tension and destabilizing move?
Well, I think all in all, Biden's recent trip to the occupied Palestine in Saudi Arabia takes place after former President Trump's unilateral rancorous policies against Iran failed. Therefore, Biden tries to kind of make a regional consensus against Iran to continue the very obnoxious policies, which is, as Professor Izzadi mentioned, part of a grand strategy of colonization and new neo-colonization. So here, there are a couple of points. Actually, much have been said regarding your question, but I would like to touch upon a couple of facts rather than analysis. Fact number one is that Biden claims that it is trying to create kind of stability in the region. That is on the one hand. And on the other hand, we know that between 2016 and 2020, according to a SIPRI report, almost half of U.S. arm exports has gone to countries in the Middle East. So the serious question to be asked here is that, is the United States trying to make stability in the region by selling weaponries, or so this is just one side of the coin. Another point is that after President Raisi came to the office, the entire effort of the current government was to develop better relations with the regional countries. Mm-hmm. And just assuming the fact that if Tehran and Riyadh could improve their relations, how huge the impact could be upon the energy market, and how huge this impact could be on the United States in a very negative way, is something that the United States is pretty much aware of and is pretty much aware of its dangers. So Biden, it's interesting, it expresses concerns of regional activities. We know that his country is the same country that attacked Afghanistan, attacked Iraq, Syria, and so forth. So the list goes on. At the same time, this is Iran that in past four decades has not started any war. And again, it's very interesting. The United States refers to Israeli concerns about Iran's activities. And here, the question is that which one is more dangerous? The Israeli regime, which possesses nuclear warheads, is not a signatory of NPT, has already occupied a and regularly attacks other countries, other Arab countries. So this country puts forth this baseless claim that Iran is a kind of concern or threat to the region. These are all contradictory lines of argument that has been used by the West in order to provide a very negative picture of Iran to the world. And I think if you just take a look at the realities in the ground, truth is something else compared to what has been put forth by the United States and its Western allies.
Now, thank you so much, Fuad Izzadi and Tohid Esadi, both of them in Tehran. Thank you for your insight and contribution.
The Emir of Qatar slams Israel as a major source of tensions in the Middle East. Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani says instability will persist in the region unless the regime stops violations of international law. The Qatari Emir noted that Israeli Salman Construction's attempts to change the demography of Al-Quds and the blockade of the Gaza Strip are the root causes of instability and tensions. He called for a just solution to the Palestinian issue, stressing that the matter is a central cause for Arab and Muslim people. Sheikh Tamim made the remarks during a GCC Plus 3 summit in Jeddah. Moving on, Israeli police say an officer has been killed after being run over by a Palestinian at a checkpoint in the occupied territories. The incident happened near the city of Ra'anana. Police have identified the Palestinian as a 17-year-old from the occupied West Bank area of Ramallah. They say he has been arrested. No further details are currently available on the incident. Tensions have been running high in the occupied territories recently as the Israeli military cracks down on Palestinians. More than 60 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli forces this year, many of them in raids. At least 19 people have also been killed in Israel in attacks by Palestinian individuals since March. As fighting rages in eastern Ukraine, Russia says it has shot down a Ukrainian Mi-17 helicopter near the town of Slovenansk. This after Moscow said it would step up its military activities in all operational areas. Russia's defense minister says the army has destroyed a depot in an industrial zone in the southern city of Odessa using long-range air-based missile. The depot is said to have stored Harpoon anti-ship missiles delivered to Ukraine by NATO. In recent days, Russia has focused its attacks on Slovenansk, which is a symbolically important city in the eastern region of Donetsk. Kiev says dozens of people have been killed in Russian shelling of urban areas in the past 3 days. Moscow says its targets do not include civilian spots. Firefighters struggle to contain wildfires as devastating flames sweep across southwestern Europe with no signs of abating. Blazes are raging in France, Greece, Portugal, and Spain have destroyed thousands of hectares of land. Scores of people have been forced to evacuate their homes. Since last week, several emergency personnel have lost their lives. Portugal, almost the entire country, is on high alert. The fire has been triggered by an unprecedented heat wave in parts of the continent. In Britain, the Weather Office has issued a first-ever red warning for extreme heat, cautioning that there is a risk to life. Scientists blame climate change and warn that further frequent and intense episodes of extreme weather are in prospect. Britain's climate minister says that he may quit if the incoming prime minister does not take a strong stance on climate change. Alex Sharma's warning comes as the Tory leadership race enters a critical phase with the final rounds of voting by MPs this week. He has accused some of the candidates of being lukewarm on net zero targets. This as a poll of Tory rank and file members who will have the final say out of the two finalists gave a surprise double-digit lead to Kemi Badenoch. Badenoch has so far refused to commit to the UK's legislated target of reaching net zero greenhouse, that is, emissions by 2050. Britain braces for record-breaking temperatures as high as 41 degrees Celsius this week. The race to replace Boris Johnson began earlier this month after he stepped down following a flood of resignations by Tory members. And the COVID-19 Omicron variant BA5 is surging in South Korea, with new daily cases doubling to 40,000 a day this week. The surge comes as another Omicron variant has been detected in the country, with growing concern about public apathy. Frank Smith reports.
Yet another wave of COVID-19 is hitting South Korea, with cases doubling to 40,000 per day in the past week. The BA5 Omicron subvariant accounts for almost a third of the new cases, a portion that is increasing. While experts recognize vaccines may not always prevent infection, they decrease illnesses and deaths.
Even people who have been infected with Omicron before are not able to develop enough immunity to this variant unless they are vaccinated. People who have been fully vaccinated and boosted but become infected have reduced chances of severe illness of 70 to 90%.
The fatality rate of COVID-19 has dropped to near the seasonal flu. Still, experts argue that changed behaviors of mask wearing and routine vaccinations should remain in place. The recent spike in COVID-19 cases here comes as South Korea Thursday detects the first case of BA2.75, nicknamed Centaurus. Scientists worry this highly mutated Omicron variant is even more transmissible than previous strains. Some want stronger antivirus enforcement, suggesting public apathy risks another COVID-induced economic downturn.
I know that more than 90% of corona can be prevented by wearing a mask, but if people keep coming inside and taking off their masks, I feel like it will be impossible to stop the spread. So the government should take stronger measures in that area.
People are required to wear masks on transit, but the government has said it will not implement lockdowns. People over 50 will be offered fourth vaccinations next week. Frank Smith, Seoul.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Internal documents reveal how Uber company won access to world leaders, cozied up to oligarchs and dodged taxes amid chaotic global expansion. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Common Dreams staff. This article is published under the heading, The Uber Files, 124,000 leaked files expose global dirty dealings of ride-hailing giant. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. Over 124,000 internal corporate files and documents, including private communications between top executives, are the basis of new reporting published recently dubbed The Uber Files, a detailed look at the ride-hailing juggernaut that aggressively lobbied governments around the world to ease regulations and pass legislation friendly to the company's bottom line, but often harmful to traditional taxi rivals and its own drivers. First obtained by the Guardian newspaper in the UK and subsequently shared with the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, ICIJ, the trove of documents offers a damning picture of the US-based tech company that revolutionized ride-hailing with a smartphone app that allowed independent drivers to become instant taxi cab drivers. According to the ICIJ, as it grew from a scrappy Silicon Valley startup to a world-conquering multi-billion-dollar operation, Uber promoted itself as a leader of the digital revolution. But the tech company pushed its agenda the old-fashioned way. Uber's scandals and missteps in the United States, from its spying on government officials to its leaks of executive misconduct, have been the subject of books, TV series, and newspaper investigations. Now, a new leak of records revealed the inside story of how the ride-hailing giant's executives muscled into new markets, then managed the fallout, spending gobs of cash on a global influence machine deployed to win favors from politicians, regulators, and other leaders who were often eager to lend a hand. The Guardian reports how the extensive leak of data lays bare the ethically questionable practices that fueled the company's transformation into one of Silicon Valley's most famous exports. The newspaper says the files cover the five-year period when Uber was run by its co-founder, Travis Kalanick, who tried to force the cab-hailing service into cities around the world, even if that meant breaching laws and taxi regulations. Episodes detailed in the reporting include ruthless behavior of Kalanick, who appeared less concerned with the well-being of Uber drivers than securing the company's ability to operate in new cities or countries. Gig Workers Rising, a collective of workers operating in the gig economy, said the leak shows how ruthless Uber was with Kalanick at the helm, but that the company continues to mistreat its drivers. Responding to the first batch of reporting on the files, with much more expected in the coming days, Sandeep Vasan, legal director of the Open Markets Institute, a think tank focused on corporate power and monopolies, called it a damning report on Uber's predatory methods of competition and growth, which antitrust enforcers here and abroad unfortunately aided and abetted because innovation, unquote.
the ocean of dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned. وليت شعري يا سيدي وإلهي ومولاي أتسلط النار على وجوه خرت لعظمتك ساجدا وعلى ألسن نطقت بتوحيدك صادقا وبشكرك مادحا وعلى قلوب اعترفت بإلهيتك محققا وعلى ضمائر حوت من العلم بك حتى صارت خاشعة وعلى جوارح سعت إلى أوطان تعبدك طائعة
Brothers and sisters, we were discussing this excerpt of the Kumail supplication. وَلَيْتَ الشِّعْرِ يَا سَيِّدِي وَإِلَهِي وَمَوْلَيْهِ Would that I knew, my master, my Allah and my protector, أَتُسَلِّطُ النَّارَ عَلَى وُجُوهٍ خَرَّتْ لِعَظَمَتِكَ سَاجِدَهِ Will you give fire dominion over the faces fallen down, prostrating before your greatness? وَعَلَىٰ أَلْسُنٍ نَطَقَتْ بِتَوْحِيدِكَ صَادِقَ Or the tongues voicing sincerely the profession of your oneness. وَبِشُكْرِكَ مَادِحَ And giving thanks to you in praise. وَعَلَىٰ قُلُوبٍ اعْتَرَفَتْ بِإِلَهِيَّتِكَ مُحَقِّقَ Or the hearts acknowledging your divinity through verification. وَعَلَىٰ ضَمَائِرَ حَوَتْ مِنَ الْعِلْمِ بِكَ حَتَّى صَارَتْ خَاشِعَةً Or the minds encompassing knowledge of you till they have become humble. وَعَلَىٰ جَوَارِحَ سَعَتْ إِلَىٰ أَوْطَانِ تَعَبُّدِكَ طَائِعَةً Or the limbs speeding to the places of your worship in obedience. وَأَشَارَتْ بِاسْتِغْفَارِكَ مُذْعِنَةً And entreating your forgiveness in submission. مَا كَلْظَنُّ بِكْ No, such opinion is not held of you. وَلَا أُخْبِرْنَا بِفَضْلِكَ عَنْكْ يَا كَرِيمُ يَا رَبْ Nor has such been reported thanks to your bounty concerning you, O Allah, the generous. We have concluded earlier on, and we have mentioned, that the most comprehensive type of worship is considered prayer. And the one who is performing prayer is showing his utmost humility to the Lord. He is confessing to his oneness and he is appreciating him. The organs of the body of the one who is performing the prayer, they are all attached to his will and they are eagerly worshiping their beloved. And this is what in return also brings love of Allah to the hearts of the friends of Allah. And this love of Allah, as we said, is the dynamic force behind their every action and whatever they do in their lives.
I wish I had known, O my Master, my God and my Lord, will you inflict fire upon faces which have submissively bowed in your prostration to your greatness? Or upon the tongues which have sincerely confirmed your unity, and have always expressed gratitude to you, or upon hearts which have acknowledged your divinity with conviction, or upon the minds which accumulated so much knowledge of you until they became submissive to you, or upon the limbs which strove to the places appointed for your worship, to adore you willingly and seek your forgiveness submissively. Such harshness is not expected from you, as it is far from your grace. O generous one, O Lord, you are aware of my weakness to bear even a minor affliction of this world and its consequence and adversity, although such afflictions are momentary, short-lived and transient.
Thank you, Allah. So good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So it is love that incentivizes the awliyaullah to dissociate themselves from all other than the Almighty Allah. Love also is never dissociated from action. These awliyaullah, the ones who have fulfilled their responsibility to religion, the ones who love Almighty Allah truly, the sign of these people who have fallen in love is action. They have activity. They have endeavor. They try to do their best. And this is really interesting that, as our tradition suggests, love compensates the inability of a deed. Love mediates for the performer of that deed, as love is an effective intercessor before Allah, the Exalted. This could be why Imam Ali alayhi salam, the commander of the believers, says, أَتُسَلِّطُ النَّارَ عَلَى وُجُوهٍ خَرَّتْ لِعَظَمَتِكَ سَاجِدَةً. Will you give fire dominion over the faces fallen down, prostrating before your lordship, before your greatness? Our tongues have voiced sincerely the profession of your oneness. مَا هَكَذَا ظَنُّ بِكَ. No such opinion is held of you, O Lord. We have loved you. This love is intercessor. In his lofty supplication at dawn, famously known as the supplication of Abu Hamza Thumali, Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam says, "My recognition, O my master, is that which guides me to you, and my love is my intercessor to you. I trust my evidence, since you have guided me to it, and I am comfortable with my intercessor, since you will accept it." In fact, the best of these evidences and intercessors are recognition and love. I assume we have sufficiently discussed the concept of recognition while we were discussing the previous parts and excerpts of Kumail's application. According to recognition and love, which is translated into ma'rifa and hub in Arabic language, the one whose evidence to Allah is ma'rifah shall never be misguided. And he whose intercessor with Allah is hubb shall never fail to reach the divine presence. Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam says, O Allah, you are indeed aware that though my obedience to you has not been persistent in practice, but it has endured in love and determination. These words and such words as this part of the Kumail supplication, وَعَلَى ضَمَائِرَ حَوَتْ مِنَ الْعِلْمِ بِكَ حَتَّى صَارَتْ خَاشِعَ. The hearts have acknowledged your divinity through verification. Our minds have encompassing knowledge of you until they have become humble. These parts are subtle indications to the fact that one's obedience to Allah may at times fall short of the desired standard. But that in which the lovers never entertain doubt is their certainty in that they do love Allah. And because of this love, Allah will not chastise them. But on the other hand, they try to do their best. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Don't let me go astray, cause I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through half my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
in the limelight.
Changing habits can be hard, but even partial shifts from meat-based menus could significantly decrease planet-heating emissions. We now present you an article written by Amanda Shupak. The piece is titled, Climate-Friendly Diets Can Make a Huge Difference, Even If You Don't Go All-Out Vegan. Chooses what you eat. If your answer is, I do, you're partly right. You may buy your own groceries and order your own restaurant meals, but it's the food industry that determines what is stocked on store shelves and listed on menus in restaurants. Matthew Hayek, Assistant Professor of Environmental Studies at New York University, says, the institutions all around us affect food choice. He said your choices are whittled down by what's in the supermarket, your workplace or school canteen, the restaurants in the strip mall on your way home. That means that for people who want to reduce the carbon footprint of their diets, the greenest option isn't always on the table. Or if it is, it isn't the most appetizing or convenient of options. What we eat has an enormous environmental impact. Scientists estimate that food production causes 35% of planet-warming greenhouse gas emissions, with meat responsible for more than twice the pollution of fruits, grains, and vegetables. In April, a report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, urged world leaders, especially those in developed countries, to support a transition to sustainable, healthy, low-emissions diet to help mitigate the worst effects of the climate crisis. But experts stress the burden can't rest on individuals making personal food choices. Producers, retailers, restaurants, workplaces and governments must all help make plant-based foods convenient, enticing and tasty. According to a report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, eating less meat is one of the most meaningful changes people can make to curb greenhouse gas emissions, help reduce deforestation, and even decrease the risk of pandemic-causing diseases passing from animals to humans. The shifts needn't be extreme. The report found adopting a healthy Mediterranean-style diet rich in grains, vegetables, nuts, and moderate amounts of fish and poultry, could be nearly as effective as going vegetarian. According to one study, if everyone met basic nutritional recommendations, which for most people in developed countries means more fruit and more vegetables and less red meat, emissions could fall by as much as 29% by 2050. Caroline Bushnell at the Good Food Institute, a non-profit organization that advocates for plant-based and cultured meat, says, but it's hard for people to change their diets. Consumers often say they're motivated to eat more healthily and more sustainably, but if given the choice between the dish that is better for the planet, but not specially appetizing, and a mouth-watering, meat-heavy option, people tend to listen to their gut and not to their conscience. Caroline Bushnell says, it's like offering someone the choice between fries, French fries, and a side salad, adding, most people don't pick the side salad. It's not really an equivalent option. She said, the Good Food Institute wants large food manufacturers and processors to change how the foods that people love are made, adding, instead of advocating for behavior change, we approach it from a supply-side angle. Big meat companies and consumer food brands are banking on plant-based proteins and laboratory-grown meat to help them respond to a growing appetite for more climate-friendly foods and to cut their own emissions. With more products to sell, retailers too need to push non-animal proteins. For example, Britain's largest supermarket chain, Tesco, set a 5-year goal to increase sales of plant-based proteins by as much as 300%. Caroline Bushnell says getting consumers to put plant-based alternatives in their shopping carts starts with placing those products next to things they're alternative to. Meat-free burgers near the ground beef, vegetarian cheeses among conventional goudas and mozzarella cheeses, rather than relegating them to a speciality section. Placement in the refrigerated section was crucial to bringing alternative milks mainstream. The tactic was pioneered in the 1990s by the founder of Silk, who started packaging his company's soy milk in traditional milk cartons and persuading grocery stores to stock them in the dairy case. Now, cow milk mingles with a bevy of nut and grain milks, and 90% of alternative milk sales come from the fridge rather than the shelf-stable aisle. However, the infiltration of alternative protein companies into supermarket real estate has not been without pushback. Several states, with pressures from farm associations, have passed laws restricting the use of words such as burger, sausage and hot dog on plant-based products on the basis they could mislead customers. A similar law was voted down in the European Union, though the bloc still prohibits labelling vegetarian products with dairy names. Caroline Bushnell says consumers are not confused. They don't think when they buy a plant-based hot dog, it's a beef hot dog, but they understand how to use it. In 2020, the research non-profit organisation the World Resources Institute released a report looking at the most effective ways to encourage people to eat less meat based on the psychology of food choices. The researchers wrote one of the strongest conclusions was that decision-making around what to eat is rarely a rational and carefully thought-through process. People crave familiarity and are influenced by subtle physical and linguistic cues. The report advises those in the food industry to offer more plant-based options, make them taste good, and make them sound good. Research shows while fried chicken is crispy and burgers are juicy, menus often describe plant-based options as healthy, vegetarian, or meat-free, none of which makes people want to order them. Using language to evoke flavour and mouthfeel rather than healthfulness or ethics makes people substantially more likely to order a vegetarian meal. When the cafes of the UK food retailer Sainsbury's renamed their meat-free sausage and mashed potatoes, Cumberland Spice Veggie Sausage and Mash, sales shot up by as much as 76%. Other linguistic nudges can promote vegetarian options by highlighting their environmental benefits. Among the most effective messages in WRI's research were calls for people to be part of something already happening, or they were easy to understand comparisons. Swapping just one meat dish for a plant-based one saves greenhouse gas emissions that are equivalent to the energy used to charge your mobile phone for 2 years. Sophie Atwood, a senior behavioural scientist at WRI, says both of those are all about making an inconsequential choice a bit more consequential. Sophie Atwood says it also helps to put vegetable options on the top of the menu and interspersed with, rather than segregated from, meat dishes. Studies have found making vegetable meals the default choice makes people many more times likely to order them. Companies and institutions can lower their emissions by offering more plant-based meals. Edwina Hughes, head of the World Resource Institute, WRI's Cool Food Program, which has pledges from more than 50 organizations to reduce the climate impact of their food by 25% by 2030, says, "They are the most important changes that an organization can make. What are you serving? What's the ratio of vegetarian to meat-based dishes?" But some experts say real change needs to include legislative measures, such as taxing meat, as some European countries are currently considering. It seems unlikely in the United States, even though one study found more than a third of Americans would support it, even as inflation pushes up food prices. Hayek says making progress requires all the tools available, educating people about food's climate impact, giving them more and better plant-based options, guiding choice by changing the default, offering incentives and imposing disincentives such as taxes, restricting and in some cases eliminating most meat options, as some European universities have. Hayek says it worked to curb smoking rates and it could work for food.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.